be off by a minute or so, but we'll call the meeting to order. We have everyone in attendance. Supervisor Wamble is excused. And let's see, you with the governors?
One of them said they could not make it. Michael could not make it, so he's excused as well.
So we are, we have our quorum, we're ready to roll. We've got an unusual November. Naturally, we had a lot of meetings in October. We didn't have the November, but we were able to cover all our business. Had our first snowfall of the year. It was 2 days after the norm that they say we have our first snowfall. And everything seemed to be rolling smoothly there. And it is our last meeting with Mr. Sisma here. As a committee, a lot of you haven't served or worked with Mr. Sisma for many years. At least three of us have for quite a while. And if you could ever have walked into a perfect situation, when I got on the county board and was first on a couple committees, it seemed as if sometimes staff wasn't very forthcoming. Not that we were a nuisance, but day-to-day lives and a lot of information just was a little more troublesome to get. I lucked out when I first got on the, it was then called Highway Committee. I had Fred Patrick, and Fred had a fantastic staff, and one of those was Gary Sipsman. And Gary moved up and took over and has filled this position with such integrity. It's just been a pleasure. About the only complaints I've ever had about Gary was when I would ask him, he knows everything about Kenosha County, but when I would ask him about a specific stop sign, I would mean like a 5 minute answer. But he would give me, you know, 18 years of history on that stop. and at committee meetings and things. But if you could ever have someone that cared more for his job, I don't think you would find anyone other than Gary Sisman doing that. And Gary, it's been a pleasure, and we greatly appreciate your input. And sorry to see you go, but I'm so happy for you that you can do that, and greatly enjoyed every meeting, and we're glad to see you get to be first here this evening. So that's all I have, other than to say happy holidays to everyone. And any other supervisors, committee members? If not, we'll move right on to division reports. Oh no, rule of the minutes of the previous meeting. Everyone has a copy of those. Moved by Supervisor Bottrom, seconded by Supervisor Gilmore to approve the previous minutes. Any discussion? Not all those in favor, you the governance?
Yeah.
Committee?
Aye.
Aye.
Minutes are approved. Citizens' comments would be next. Any citizens that wish to address the committee would have 5 minutes to speak on anything pertaining to this committee's business. Seeing no citizen comments now, sorry, we'll move on to Gary.
First item is a consideration of a resolution to approve the appointment of Lieutenant Thomas Gilley to the Kenosha County Traffic Safety Commission. This is an appointment from the County Executive to this committee for consideration, and then forward your recommendation to the County Board. If you haven't heard it from me before, I just briefly say that the importance of the County Traffic Safety Commission is really tremendous. It provides our department and any department or entity that's involved in traffic safety with information that hopefully can be applied and provide a safer transportation system for the county. One of the most important positions on that commission is the representative of the county sheriff's department, because they are the ones that have seen virtually everything that has to do with traffic safety, and Lieutenant Gilley is certainly one of those people. I believe he's had about 17 years of patrol.
19 years total, 17 years of patrol, most of them second shift. So.
This is Lieutenant Gilley is here tonight, and I don't know if you want to just a few words of your background?
Sure, absolutely. My name is Tom Gilley. I've been with the Sheriff's Department 19 years. Previously, I supervised our detective bureau. I was just reassigned to day shift patrol. As you all know, Tom Podolka's retired, so I'm kind of filling his vacancy here. I know he fulfilled this position for a long time, so they asked me to step in. I have a lot to learn, but I'm looking forward to it.
And I certainly recommend that this resolution be approved.
Thank you, Gary. Any from the committee?
Move to approve.
Moved by Supervisor Bostrom to approve the appointment.
Second.
Second by Supervisor Grady. Any discussion? If not, you the governance?
Aye.
Committee?
Aye. Aye.
And
thank you.
So we thank
Absolutely.
You very much for being here.
Right. Thank you for having me.
Yep.
The second one is a resolution to dedicate right of way for the purpose of highway reconstruction and storm sewer installation. As we all know, we'll be reconstructing a section of Highway W in Salem. And part of the FHWA requirement is that all land must be acquired for the purpose of the construction or for any activity as far as that project is concerned. And so even if the property is owned by the county, so the only way the county can acquire the property for the purpose of construction, which is also county property, is to dedicate that property. And so this resolution is to dedicate sections of parcels for the purpose of roadway construction and storm sewer installation. There's no financial implication as far as this dedication is concerned. It's just a paperwork requirement from FHWA. We've reviewed the requirements, and because of the importance for the dedication in order for us to realize this project, we are recommending that the county board approve the dedication of the right of way for this roadway construction.
So if people aren't familiar with, sometimes we have the street numbers and the highway numbers, Highway W on the heading south off of Highway F, before you get to Highway 50 is where this is, and it's a straight left-hand turn, 90-degree angle left. The house in front of it was hit probably five or six times. We put in guardrails 20-some years ago, and that was hit probably 10 times. And we bought the property, and this is to straighten that section of Highway W out. And as Clement said, we own it, but we still have to give ourselves an easement in order to do this properly. Any questions, or if not, we have a motion.
Motion to approve.
Motion approved by Supervisor Gilmore.
Second.
Second by Supervisor O'Day. Any discussion? No. Not you, the governance?
Aye.
Committee?
Aye.
Thank you, Clement. That's approved.
Just under reports, I just wanted to talk a little bit about my retirement. I am retiring at the end of the year, and I haven't kept track of exactly how many of these committee meetings I've gone to or attended, but looking at my entire career, if I went to one every month, this would be my 450th meeting. That kind of gives you an idea of how long you've been around. I greatly appreciate the support that, that you've given as a committee and certainly as a county board. The responsibility involved in maintaining every highway in Kenosha County is huge, and I truly am humbled that you have the confidence in me to take on that responsibility. And I've always felt that way, that I can never say I had a bad day as an employee of Kenosha County. Kenosha County's been good to me as an employee, and I've tried to do everything in the public's best interest. That sometimes means saying no to individuals, and I didn't always keep everybody happy. I don't think that is entirely possible, but I certainly tried my best to do what's in the public's best interest. So hopefully I was successful with that. And just to leave you with a couple of things in the future, to just keep in mind a couple of areas where I think I'm leaving the department a little bit behind in. One is asphalt paving program. It's a little behind because it's always a little behind, but just to keep in mind to do what you can to support the funding for that program. It's so important to the system and to the quality of our transportation system. And then secondly, replacement of plow trucks. It's always a struggle. They're very, very expensive, and they're hard. It's hard to dedicate that amount of money, but we are getting a little bit behind on that too. So just a couple of items of recommendation. And then I just leaving you with a great staff. All the employees at Division of Highways are incredibly dedicated and do a great job, and I think we're leaving it in good hands with Clement. He just, December 1st was his 1 year anniversary here, so he certainly learned a lot, and I'm completely confident that he'll be able to move forward and, very successfully. So that's it.
Well, Gary, there's you know, extended knowledge, and then there's learned knowledge. And Ray and I were talking this week at our pre-meeting meeting, and we're talking about your extended knowledge, and that's just hard to come up with. So we're hoping is that you don't. Don't unplug your phone. Ray might need you, and we can work out consultant fees, and we can work out all those things. But you're too young not to take a phone call every once in a while when we have some questions.
I would always do that.
We figured you would, but Ray's got the paperwork.
I don't need to be a consultant. I don't want to be a consultant. I'll just be there to.
Thank you. So, for highways, do we have anything else? No. All right, thank you very much. Parks, Matthew.
First thing we have is a consideration for a resolution to proclaim September 16th, 2017 as International Migratory Bird Day in Kenosha County. For the new members of the committee, this is an annual resolution that we have to do in order to obtain and retain our bird city status. So we partner with the Pringle Nature Center to have an International Migratory Bird Day Fall Fun Fest, as I've called it before, that some of you have attended in years past. But it has numerous different checklists as far as what you have to do in order to retain that bird city status. And monitoring of birds and all this other good stuff. But as far as bringing this to the committee, it has to go through in order to have that 2017 bird city status.
So, a motion for the migratory bird resolution. Motion by Supervisor Crandall.
It was me.
Oh, Franco, I'm sorry.
Franco.
Any discussion? If not, you the governance?
Aye.
Committee?
Aye.
Aye.
Our decisions.
Right. The next one we have is consideration for the resolution to dedicate a right-of-way from parcels 8 and 13. I'm sorry, I was reading the highway. That does not sound like mine whatsoever. I'm not highway, I'm not.
No, you're not repairing either.
To accept a grant funding Kenosha County Parks Reforestation Program. So recently we were awarded $98,757 to completely reforest as far as our master plan reforest, Petrifying Springs Park and Golf Course with 317 trees. So we had to bring this over to the committee in order to make that budget bond to accept the $98,757.
So, Matt, this is for just the one park?
Yes, Petrifying Springs Park and Golf Course.
And this is huge.
This is a big deal for
this
us.
This is, we've gotten a couple small grants, but nothing to this.
And this is basically not matched. This is 100% funded through the grant source. Right. So it's even better when we don't even have to do a match grant. So that pays for personnel, tree gators to basically help out with our watering program, tree guards to protect the trees from deer and other species, and the actual specific tree amount as well.
And where will this put us out there?
As far as
where we need to be for replacement?
Well, that's 100% of the trees that, back when we did the whole reforestation program and the EAB program, John Rudy, UW Extension, and our park staff came up with an entire tree plan to diversify so we don't have the monoculture of ash trees throughout the park system. So each one of the parks that we removed all these ash trees, they came up with an extensive plan of not only the species that we're going to choose from, but the specific locations of where they would be replaced. So when we wrote this grant, it was for the entirety of the 317 trees for the park and golf course, which we were awarded for. So it'll take care of the whole entire program.
For the golf course and the park?
And the park, correct.
Supervisor Green?
What are the top three species we're going to plant?
I have a list that I have them all memorized. So we have hawthorn, serviceberry, sycamore, flowering crabapple, elm, maple, hackberry, beech, Kentucky coffee tree, oak, buckeye, musselwood, birch, horse chestnut, dogwood, ginkgo, tule tree, black hill spruce, white pine, bald cypress, arborvitae, and linden.
Now, would all these be native to our area? Would they be
a majority of them? I would say not 100%.
So a couple of them would be non-native.
Correct.
How many trees is it going to be?
317. And it's all going to be contracted now. It's just something. So we're basically going to be going out to bid. And next year, we anticipate the actual planting to happen fall of 2017. That'll be the best time for us to plant these trees. We don't want to do it in the middle of summer when they're more susceptible to drought and everything else. So this is going to be basically almost a two-year program where we'd be planting in the fall of 2017. And then the grant also funded over $8,000 for seasonal staff to water those the following.
It's a beautiful thing.
Yes.
Most of all of these trees, when you say native, I mean native in the last 100 years, you know. Mm-hmm. But I mean, buckeye is Ohio buckeye. Well, they call it Ohio buckeye, but I mean, they've been in Wisconsin for over 100 years. So, mm-hmm. And some of these aren't like the ash were. You know, ash was a fast-growing hardwood. You get into serviceberry, any fruit tree has a short lifespan, so I mean we're planting a wide variety of things, but some of them naturally aren't to do the same thing that they did. But when you get into the confusion a lot of people have now when you're doing this reforesting with this, is that some of you didn't, but I grew up with the elm, Dutch elm disease, and now in my business, that's one of the most sought-after trees for parkway planting in cities again, because it's a total disease-resistant elm, you know, compared to what we had back then. So And they are gorgeous, you know, with a canopy similar to an ash. And, so that, to have that, this type of grant, I mean, this is a big win for us. Big win. Where do we stand on Brightondale and those types of?
We put in for a few grants. Unfortunately, the DNR, the urban forestry grant that we put in for that one, and unfortunately, we did not get the ticket with that one. They probably heard that we received $98,000 already, so that's good enough.
Yeah, but we got five parks. Yeah. I mean, that lost a lot of trees.
Absolutely. So we'll keep on plugging away with these grant dollars.
Well, this is very good work, Matt. Do any other questions for Matt? In fact, we have a motion to vote.
So moved.
Moved by Supervisor O'Day.
Second.
Second by Supervisor Bostrom. Any discussion? If not, you the governance?
Aye.
Committee?
Aye.
Thank you.
All right, the last one that I have, not Gary's or Highways, I promise, is a resolution to apply for a We Energies permanent easement request within Petrified Fine Springs Park. Currently, what we are attempting to do is work with We Energies to bring power to Pavilion Number 5 within Petrified Springs Park. We rent out all of our pavilions throughout the parkway. So we have Pavilion 1, 3, 4, 5, 6, and 7. Five and seven do not have power currently for our patrons that rent these out. So unfortunately, if you're the last to choose from any of these pavilions that get rented out every weekend, Saturday and Sunday, unfortunately we cannot accommodate electric to these rentable facilities at number 5. So working with We Energies, what they need to do in order to extend power off of Highway 31, they're going to underground bore and we will be able to have power going to the number 5. Finally. So this is just the paperwork that we need in order to have that.
Which pavilion is right across from the dog park?
That's number 1. So this is more on the north side.
Okay.
For number 5.
So any other questions?
Yes.
I think so. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. You said We Energies is going to bore under. Is that on their dime or on our dime?
It will have a fee for us to do.
Do you know which that is?
$6,000.
Really? That's it?
It started off as $40,000.
Okay.
And then I talked to them, and then we settled them down and had a different plan of attack.
Okay.
They first wanted to go from one of our pavilions with a light pole and actually do underground boring below the Pike River and do all this other stuff and tree removal, and I said no. And you got 31 right there, can't you just connect it? So I worked with their engineers and we were able to lower the cost substantially from $40,000 down to that $6,000.
Very good.
Thank you.
Anything else? Do we have a motion to approve?
So moved.
Supervisor Brady? Second.
Second.
Second by Supervisor Bostrom. You the governor?
Aye.
Committee?
Aye.
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 Thank you,
Matt. All right, then for the division report. Silver Lake Park, we had our staff, I reported that we were working on the tee pads over at Silver Lake Park disc golf course, and we were successful. We were able to add all 18 tee pads this fall, so that was huge for us because that is becoming extremely popular with our disc golf community. Fox River Park, we have 27 holes over there. Some are more challenging than others, but truly Silver Lake Park became more championship style, so we're having more of a regional draw that we even see on social media. They have all these networking places where you can talk about different disc golf courses, and that's one of the premier spots. So by adding these amenities such as the tee pads and concrete tee pads, we'll see a lot more traffic going to Silver Lake Park now. So that was a huge success for accomplishing that this last fall. Also, Fox River, what I consider the overnight lodge, this is a kind of a new initiative by our park staff, working in conjunction with local Eagle Scouts and Scout groups. There's an old superintendent house within Fox River Park off of Highway W where a service yard is located. It's actually where John Rudy used to live for many years. And after John Rudy no longer lived there, it got turned into more of an office area for our staff that was out of Fox River Park before KD Park was in existence. So basically, we had the idea to make better use of this is to convert it over to an overnight lodge for scout and civic groups to stay overnight within the park. So basically, they camp overnight already, but it's more in a double shelter where you have to hang up tarps and kind of you're out in the elements. This gives maybe younger kids more exposure to a park-like setting that's a little bit more unique, and then they do have obviously the park as their backyard for their events. So we're working this fall in order to kind of renovate a few things and work with those local scouts to hopefully have that up and running by next year. And then Petrifying Springs Park, we completed the decorating of two trees within Pets and a couple of the pavilions, so you can see the pictures that are attached on there. The nice blue one that you see, if you haven't driven it, and I don't think the picture really does it justice on how bright that sucker is, but we put 4,620 light bulbs on there, which equals 1/3 of a mile of lights. And that only is 318 watts per day, so it's just as much as basically having a window fan run for 8 hours.
Did you talk to Mike about this?
No, I did not.
Focus on energy.
Obviously, yeah. It's LED lights.
Yeah, it's kind of LED.
Is that kind of like the one at Breezy Hill?
It is. That's where I kind of got inspired with that one. Yeah. So the public has just been raving about it. So
yeah, they can.
Yeah.
I'll have to get out there.
Yeah, you definitely should. Next, we have Communications Education Support Specialist. This is basically a shared position that's full-time. Her name is Nancy Retnon. She was hired to replace Kristen, who was our previous grant writer that left for a different position. So Nancy will be shared between UW Extension Parks and P&D, and her first day will be the 5th. So, next, we have park interns. We recruited 3 college interns from Parkside and Carthage to work for the parks. So they do natural resources, graphic design, and marketing and recreation. A couple events coming up. This weekend, we got Trail Run over at Pets. On January 21st, we got the 4-H Ice Fishing Derby at Katy Park. And then we have a run walk back at Katy Park on the 22nd. And then for your reading pleasure, we attach the Pringle Nature Center monthly reports and quarterly reports and budget items on there. And that is all I have.
Thank you, Matt. I was approached by, well, now I'm on the library board. I was approached by the Friends of the Library, and I'll talk to you about it later on, but they want to know if they can do a 5K run out at the Katy Park in April. Have they talked to you?
No, but it'll be a great idea.
Oh, I do too. Yeah, and I told them that, you know, they do all kind of different things. The Friends are who supports the funding for the library. And yeah, the other thing on your report, that overnight lodge, I've slept there a lot of times. Because, you know, there's not that many people who were superintendents of that park. It started in the 30s. And Roy Swartz, Sr., was one of the early ones. Roy and Miller Swartz, that's the parents of Paul Swartz, who had the nursery out there. So, I mean, I overnighted in that place many times when it was and then it was John Heisler, and then it was John Rudy that lived in that place. And part of that, if I remember correctly, has some old, not log, but real old wood, because the CCC guys built that. There's some internal wood in that place that is... days way back on that building. So that's cool that you're doing that,
yeah.
Especially for scouts. And
absolutely.
Really nice.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think you kind of answered most of my questions about the building. Before I get to that, are you going to get a new letterhead? This interim director?
Oh, sorry. I'm official.
Yeah. Yes. How much in the way of alterations do you think you're going to need to make this work for Cub Scouts, depending on that? I assume you're not going to be installing a lot of granite countertops.
No. We're being very fiscally responsible with this. We already had the Cub Scouts do all of our cleaning, basically, and prep work, so there's no staff costs to kind of just do all that prep work. we're having Eagle, and then Eagle Scout do the bunk beds for us. So he's going to be constructing all bunk beds for the necessary rooms. We're going to be doing three-tier bunk beds and two bedrooms. We'll have basically room for 18 scouts between the two rooms, and then we'll have bunk beds and a separate room where our office space was for the actual counselors, group leaders, parents to be housed in. So that's going to be covered through Eagle Scout projects. There was another Eagle Scout that had leftover money from his project of creating benches at Fox River, Boyne, I think I touched on a previous meeting. And he had $760 left over from that project that he donated for paint. So we're using that money to paint the interior of the facility. So all in all, it's going to be pretty minimal of what we'll have to do to get that place up and running.
And when do you anticipate it being ready? Next season?
I would say by next season. So it's whenever we have those, you know, rainy days, or, you know, we have a little bit of time on our hands, that we'll go in there and help out with other projects or have organized work days with the scouts to kind of just get it up and running.
Cool. Thank you.
It was never trashed. It was being used for the park guys. And the main area was kind of cleaned out for a meeting room. I'm assuming that's where the bunks and all that are going to go.
It's going to go in the back two bedrooms.
Yeah.
And then they got the bathroom facility.
And there's a kitchen in there, in that area. But that's really cool. That goes back, I can never quit talking about that park. That park was purchased from my grandfather, you know, for the CCC camp. But it was my family's farm going back to 1860-something, up to the Fox River. There was no big tree stands. I mean, it was, they cut slew hay and planted corn and everything down there when I was a kid. In the barn that's on the corner at F&W, there was the big shoes that they put on the horses. They were big wooden shoes that actually were about 18 inches square. So that when they were down along the Fox River, the horses didn't sink in. And they'd cut with the scythe. They had a scythe that did the, and I don't know what happened to those things. We still have a couple of the saws, but those, I mean, you can still see those at historical museums. It was like a snowshoe for a horse, for a lot of factors. And now, when you look at the pictures John Rudy had saved and did out here of that CCC camp before it was wooded, you know, I mean, there was some stands of trees, and now you see. So it's a real cool thing to have these scouts out there. Very neat. Anything for Matt? Anything else? For Matt, do you have anything else?
No, I'm good. Done.
Okay, Dan.
Well, all the way through our right up to the end, we were getting great comments on the golf courses. We did get to complete all of our core verification that we were looking to do. Most of the fairways at Frightendale got done. We did the irrigation blowout at the end of the month of October and into November, and that work went without problems. So everything at the golf course was winterized and on the course and is ready to roll. Really am proud to announce that Petrifying Springs for the fourth year in a row is voted best golf course over Kenosha County, and Brightondale now has won best west of the eye for Kenosha County as voted on by the Kenosha Newsreader. So it's great to know that our golfers are playing some of the best golf courses in the area. So it's really, I was really happy to learn that we won that again. Brightondale officially closed on the 29th, and obviously, with the snow, we closed Petrifying Springs Saturday was our last day. Everything was really good in November. I mean, with that good weather, you know, we were ahead of rounds and overall we're up and had an excellent season, you know, across golf. So I'm really happy to announce that too. Our next big initiative is the special holiday clearance sale that we're having at Petrifying Springs. We've even brought in apparel and shoes and belts and hats for this sale. Last year we did very well with the sale, so we're going to be open from 11 to 6 from Wednesday through Saturday from now until December 23rd. We had good results with it, and so we thought we'd bring it back. We're also selling gift cards, and we're giving away free rounds of golf, just the green fees, for purchases of those gift cards. So we'll have an email blast going out again tomorrow, and then you know, we'll be there. So the dining room, we rearranged and put all the merchandise out there, and people are really excited about going in there and finding all the good deals that we have, and so it's working out well. We're looking forward to a productive off season, rolling up our sleeves and booking groups and restocking the golf shop. We're the maintenance crew. We're down to two, our full-time people over at Brightondale and two at Petrifying Springs, and they're tuning up all the equipment. We got project lists for all the clubhouses, everything that we're going to be working on in there, touching up the paint and cleaning and everything. Tim Cadd came from facilities last year and really helped us out and did a great job. And you know, it was maintained well, so it's not nearly as daunting of a task this year as it was last year. And so that's a big help. So I think that we'll be ready to roll by March, and hopefully we'll get some good spring weather. Projects that we are continuing to work on, the ash tree removal. We had about 300 trees that did not get cut down last year at Brightondale on the golf course. We did mark a few other trees that are nuisance trees, the dead trees that we would like to get down. So we're hoping that when the logger comes after the ground freezes, that he can take some additional trees down just for the wood. And so we'll be working with him to remove all the rest of those trees. The bunker removal program, you know, we just got hit with that wet weather, and we just couldn't have the bobcats out on the golf course like we liked. You know, we had trucks to haul the dirt out there, and it just it kind of bogged down this October. We weren't able to finish what we wanted to, so we'll try and get back after that as quickly as we can get out there in the spring. We targeted like 12 bunkers, and we're going to try and get those done as soon as we can, and then in the fall we're hoping to get some more of that done. And then like I said, the winterization of the clubhouses and the golf courses went real well, so we're ready for the off season.
Any questions for Dan?
Yes. Pricing for the next year, when do you decide?
Yeah, we'll do that in February, but yeah.
Okay, because I couldn't remember.
Brady?
Towards the end of the season, I heard reports, just anecdotal reports, of either attraction towards Petrifying Springs, maybe Brightondale as well, or dissatisfaction with other area golf courses. Can you comment upon new league play that is in the works or could be happening?
Yeah, we booked three new leagues, two at Petrifying Springs and one at Brightondale. What we did was we reorganized some of the league play at Petrifying Springs, and we tried to have a limit that you had to have at least 16 players to be in a league to block our primetime weekday tee times that they've been getting. So we sent out an email and gave a letter to all the league contacts and said, you know, please get back to us if you can fulfill your league. And we had a couple leagues that weren't as dedicated as all the rest of them, and for those prime time tee times. So we opened up some tee times in that afternoon weekday periods, and we were able to book two leagues there because of course conditions mostly and customer service, and then one out at Brightondale from other golf courses.
That's encouraging. That's good. That's, you know, the lifeblood of any golf course is league play. Dependable, that they're every single week. And if we can cultivate that and promote it, this just becomes a self-fueling entity. So good job there, Dan. Thanks.
Anything else for Dan? All righty, thank you. Mike.
Start with the focus on energy spreadsheet. And again, if you refer to that, the changes are in red. Not a lot to report, but the big thing on there is the figures in annual savings. Everybody sees that there's a goal in the report. Those used to be marked to be determined. I've been waiting a long time for them to come in, and I finally got that from We Energy. So you can see with the KCBC project, the annual savings in doing that project, once it's done, is just under $6,000. That calculates out to a payback of 10.1 years. A little longer than you'd like to see, but it's just a matter of the fixtures and the quantity. Second one is for the project for the garage downstairs at this building. Annual savings of just over $9,000, which is a really nice one. With a 4.8-year payback. I changed the completion date on that to a month from into the first year. I kind of thought in the beginning we'd have that done by the end of December, but our electrician's gotten kind of busy with some other internal projects. So I let him do that, and we pushed that project a month. Next one down is a project we're going to try and do during the course of next year. That's the outdoor lighting at KCC, converting that to LED. You can see on there the savings is really high on that one. It's $12,572 with a payback of 5 years. And then the last one is the one we're currently doing right now at the parking ramp. It's 99% done with the new fixtures. It's got an annual savings of just over $4,000. And again, with a 10.1-year payback. It's going to take until the end of December to get a couple more parts for adjustments we had to make, but then that will be done. And then January 1st, he'll jump on the truck garage and we'll get that one done. I'm thinking within a month, and that'll be a dramatic change down there. So that's pretty much the changes on the Focus on Energy list.
Mike, Ray was saying that also we're dealing with not only better lighting, but we're over I know we're dealing with two different things, but he said at Brookside, when we did the lighting there with five lights, did it with two, same amount of lighting, that we were able to do. And these incentives, you know, it doesn't bother me that it's 10-year. I mean, it's very nice to see that 4.8-year one, but when you're saving $4,000, $6,000 a year and it's 10 years, you're saving that money each year. That's this is quite the program. I know Supervisor Greedy has commented on it many times. All of us read it, and it's very nice to see these come to completion here. It's really cool. Supervisor Boswell.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just a quick question, because I don't recall this last time, but there's the KCDC project. Is that really a completion date next December?
Yes, it is.
Okay.
Yep. It's a project that'll happen sometime during the course of next year. There's two projects that'll go on next year, the outdoor lighting for this one and KCDC.
Okay.
And then those are the final ones for the outdoor of all the campuses that are completely done.
Got it. Thanks.
And the only other thing I wanted to say about the payback part of it, really the numbers we've got there are strictly the utility cost savings that we get from Focus on Energy. As far as the maintenance,
right,
going up, and especially, you know, outdoor lighting requires a lift and whatever else, the maintenance interaction in a parking garage alone is significant. And if you go down like to the parking garage especially, the lighting difference is just dramatic from a security or a safety standpoint. It's dramatic. As Chairman Elmer said, at Brookside we went in the back parking lot, the employee parking lot, we're literally with the two lights generating more lumens than the five old style. And they said it drew a total of 4 amps, I believe, is what it takes for those two lights. So it's amazing. You know, it's just amazing. So
yeah.
It's really been a good
thing. I've used the example before with the job center, which was one of the first ones we did outside in the parking lot. There was a couple fixtures with four different lights on them, and they were 400 watt lights each, so you got 1600 watts on each pole. And there were a number of poles. Time we were done, it was down to 210 total watts and better lighting for each of those poles. So that was a huge one right there, a big eye opener for me. It was my first experience with it, and kind of lighted what my fuse to get going on. But the parking ramp, just to inform everybody, there's we're using what are called smart fixtures now. It's evolved to smart fixtures into lights now, and there's factory settings, which is what we're using in that case, but we've got basically remote, just like a ceiling fan, remote, you can go up to the fixture and change the program. And they basically, you can set them to come on once they set motion, and then they time out and go back. So they're at a low level. And the ones at the entrances are just on all the time because it's always dark in there. That's a big savings right there with that feature.
What's interesting, only because I'd like to geek out on this stuff,
yeah,
is in the old days, which was 5 years ago, really, you have to put a control panel in for like the parking garage, that was about a $15,000 to $20,000 adventure that would be used as a master control to control all your light fixtures. Now, because it's about a $25 adder to the fixture itself, you can control each one and program it each individually to completely eliminate the need for that custom master panel to run everything. It's completely gone.
You know, is there an app on your phone for that?
There can be an app.
Yeah, I can remember your damn password.
Passwords, yeah.
But the parking ramp does have one of those controllers.
Right, it's got the old
controller. We are all but bandied.
Which never worked correctly from the beginning. It's another pet peeve.
Well, when we did that, the job center, I heard that that McDonald's down the road, they burnt their fries for the first 3 days after that. Because of what we were saving.
All right. Yep.
But I think you make a good point about the savings just from the electrical consumption standpoint. The labor is one thing. But, you know, some of these bulbs replaced themselves, metal halide bulbs, you know, different ones, the high pressure sodium, they're expensive.
Yeah.
You know, so you have to replace 15, 20. You could be adding potentially, I'm just guessing, maybe even 25% additional savings onto what we're seeing here because you're limiting the labor and the fixture, material.
And the labor part, just to explain what it would be, typically once a year, you know, like when daylight savings, or which one is it, the fall, you know, right before that when it gets dark in the parking lots where the employees are going out when it's dark, right. We want all of our lights lit, so we would make sure going into winter that we'd have everything up and running, so we'd be going through all those lots that one time of year, changing any bulbs that were burnt out, any transformers that had, you know, failed, and what that would involve is getting the highway department to transport the big blue lift to each facility, coordinate with them when they weren't using it, trying to get it done before it got too cold and windy and everything else to go up high and do that. And the material cost, and then now we're having our electrician do it for the last 2 years, and he would literally be tied up for at least a good month going from facility to facility with all these schedules trying to get it bundled into that time frame. So that all goes away, and that's a part of the spreadsheet you really don't see that's a huge, huge savings for
labor
coordinating. Yeah. So that's the spreadsheet. I guess outstanding projects, I've just got one on there that's really been on there since summer, and it'll be closed out this Friday, and that's the upgrade to the security system at the PSB and ID and Evidence Bureau. Then you've got just a couple of modifications to do the cameras that they mounted, and that project will be closed out, so next meeting that'll be on. That's it.
Okay, thank you, Mike. Great. Division projects.
Mr. Chairman, first one, fire alarm system replacement project. The courthouse is ongoing. Rewall Electric has got that with Simplex, and it's going well, and we're still looking at the end of February to be completed with that. No other questions? Go on to the PSB generator replacement. Premier Power, out of Racine, won that bid. We've been getting submittals in, and we expect in the next 2 weeks to have the submittals all wrapped up and approved. No further questions? Go on to the PSB Edition second floor project. We're looking at trying to get the bid out on the street before the end of the year, but it's really going to be a push. A lot of details to be had. It's a big project. Got everybody on deck pushing for it. And the final one, branch four courtroom remodel. We're also looking to get the specs together by the end of the year. Right now, we're concentrating on the audiovisual portion of it. That's it for my side.
So these are all big projects. We've talked a lot about the generator one, but now we got some bids, and we got a good bid, and we're going to be able to roll on that, but it's probably a spring project.
Yeah, looking like it.
Right.
It can do a lot of work inside, electrical-wise, get right. Everything prepped.
So they get their generator board, and that's what the submitted is, Frank, reference. We're going through some of the details to make sure that generator and everything about it meets the specifications. It looks good right now, but we're hoping in the next 2 weeks to get it all wrapped up so that we can finalize stuff, get a schedule built out. So by the next committee meeting, we should be able to define a work schedule. So you know exactly what that's going to be.
Yes.
Just a question on that. If I recall, it's an outcropping right now on the building itself, right? It's kind of its own little room or whatever. Is that going to be utilized and repurposed, or is it going to go to a different location, or what's the plan now?
When you talked about the courthouse fire alarm?
The generator.
Oh, the generator, yeah. And it was the old one, which was a 250 kilowatt, original to the building, was shoehorned into like a triangular shape. Right. That triangular shape that sits out on the northwest corner. And it, I don't know how they did it. It doesn't appear that it met code when they put it in. So when we went to go look at putting a new one in, plus all of the future loads, there was no way we could put it in that building or that part of the building. And the best option was to get an exterior housing kit that comes from the manufacturer, heaters, everything included in it, and put it right outside of that area. And all the electrical panels would be in there. So it would be close to all the infrastructure that's already there, all the feeders are already there. We free up the room in there to put the additional transfer switches, everything. So that's how it came to be.
So it's a portable classroom for the generator, basically.
It's a portable classroom for the generator.
Very cool. Anything else for Frank? The remodel. That some of that work would begin in the spring on the courtroom?
Yes, it would. It would begin in the spring.
If we're lucky, we're hoping that'll be done by end of second quarter in the spring. So we can get that. We want to push to get that one done. It shouldn't take that long once it's actually bid out. We select a contract.
And get people moved out.
Right. We have to set up a temporary courtroom and stuff.
And what about bids for this roof? Are they out? Are they in process? Or
that's a good question. We actually have IRS, the consultant that we had do the other part. They did all the surveying of the roofs already, took their cores, went over the, and they're putting all of the specifications together now. Okay. So we'll be able to send them out.
So you're just in the process of drawing the packages up the specs?
Correct. We'll do it exactly like we did last year. We'll get the bids out on the street in January, and that's when we had a fantastic response. And so we're following the same playbook.
Good, excellent.
Maybe Ray could give just a short little blurb here, Ray, on the prevailing wage thing that we're dealing with.
Yeah, in case, I think most of the board members are aware of it, but January 1st, the prevailing wage laws modified goes into effect, and the kind of conventional wisdom is that, you know, there's going to be this great savings for building projects right away. And I, talking with people in the industry, I just don't think it's going to happen. At least not initially. It will eventually, but not initially, because especially for the larger projects, anything that's a multi-million-dollar project, there is. Many municipalities are holding back on bidding those now until the first of the year, anticipating that there's going to be some, you know, large savings. But if you think about it, really the contractors that are capable of bidding on those larger projects, for the most part in our region, are large union contractors. They all have contracts that go out 2 to 3 years from now. So they're still going to have to bid at those union wages. On top of it now, if you in fact do have an influx of folks that are all kind of trying to bid at the same time, what naturally happens in that situation is everything gets inflated, because those contractors are probably going to cherry pick those jobs. So what we're trying to do from a strategy standpoint is keep our smaller projects so that the smaller contractors that will be able to take advantage of their wage situation. Those smaller projects will be available. We're going to do those after the first of the year so that we can get hopefully some pretty aggressive pricing, because they're smaller projects. The one larger project that we're really pushing to get done get the bid specs done this year yet. I don't know if we're going to make it with that. It's going to be really close because there's just a lot involved. That's kind of what we're driving for, because we think there could be an advantage to getting that out on the street this year prior to the first of the year because of what is kind of anticipated is going to happen. So it's kind of the strategy that we've got. I'm going to meet with the executive tomorrow to go over some of that in detail and see what exactly, you know, what's going to make the most sense. But we're looking at it strategically because my perception is based on, again, talking with a bunch of folks, that there's a lot of folks that are holding projects and they're all going to be out on the street at the same time. And when contractors have deadlines, they cherry pick and pick, and they are not bashful about pumping up their prices. So I think that that's probably what's going to happen in the first quarter. We'll see. That's kind of what's going on.
Yeah, basically we just don't have the contractors that we had 10 years ago.
Right.
The numbers are half. So when you come up and people are starting to do well, and some of the other municipalities that haven't used these strategies that Ray has the last couple of years, they're all going to flop them out there January 1st, and so that's kind of what we're worried about.
Yep. It'll be interesting. It'll be very interesting.
We did well last year with all our timing. It worked, but we just don't know.
We'll see. This will be an interesting year.
Anything else, Frank?
That's it.
All right. Thank you very much. Mr. Arbor.
Sure. Brookside update. Again, I encourage any of the committee members, if they want to check out and see where it's at compared to the last time you were out there. Quite a bit has happened. Storage building on the east side of the building. The overhead doors were installed Thursday and Friday last week. Electric should be complete tomorrow. And we plan on starting to move storage stuff into that storage building by the end of the week. In the CBRF, so that's the wings closest to to Washington Road, the heat is on. The heat's been on for about 10 days now. They're at the point where they're just getting ready to do drywall on the walls. The state inspector was in today. I didn't get a final report on that, but I assume no news is good news, but I'll talk with the construction folks tomorrow morning. He had to come in, and he didn't want to come until we got to this point in the building and do an on-site. We've been in constant communication with them, but he didn't want to come in until now when we got to a certain point with stuff. But as soon as if everything got approved today, we're going to start in earnest the drywalling of the walls. Ceiling stuff is done in that building, given the construction technique where all the mechanicals are below the ceiling in this building. We're going to start the drywall in earnest on the walls then this week. So that's actually comfortable to walk through now, and it's really starting to take shape. The rehab unit, so the two wings to the north, should be weather tight by the end of the week. They were actually pouring the stairs. They had all the metal framing done for the stairwells in all of those buildings. That was done on Thursday last week. They were going to start pouring on Friday, and then I think, is that when the weather changed? I think, yeah, it got really cold, and we had to take a time out and create some temporary barriers to actually heat those stairwells so they could do the pouring of that concrete today. That, I confirmed, was taking place this morning. So the stairwells should all be complete this week, actually functional, so the trades guys can use the stairs as opposed to some of the other ways they were getting in between the floors. And the building itself, all of the rehab areas should be weather tight. Like I say, or I haven't said this yet, that should be weather tight by Monday of next week. They were shooting for the 9th, this Friday, but it'll probably be Monday next week. And then the heat should be on before the end of next week in the rehab unit as well. So then we're pretty much set for the winter. The bulk of the activity is going to take place is all inside work. Heat will be on. They'll be able to keep moving with the project. They're about a week and a half yet behind from where they were from all the soils issues, how that affected the schedule on that part of the building. But it's basically in pretty good shape. The weather helped us out, there's no doubt about it. Site work, all the site work that we Energies had to do is complete. I think I told the committee that the service to the existing building had to be replaced in addition to the new service going in. All that work is complete, so all the juice that's being provided to both, or all the new construction, is all coming from the actual service. There's no temporary stuff in place anymore. There were some additional soils issues that we encountered for the back road that goes around the building going down to the employee parking lot. But we worked through those and were at least able to get a binder coat of paving down, the highway department was. So we've got that pretty much solid for the winter, and that was one of the critical things we wanted to get done. They actually continued with some concrete curb work then after that. They were doing that up until actually last week they were still doing it. It's going to be probably finished now unless we get a warming trend. But they're probably done with their outside concrete work. Contingency is, I'm going to say, again, it's not, I don't have it fine-tuned because we've got some estimates for some soil costs that I haven't gotten in yet. It's probably slightly less than 100 grand though. So I'm officially putting the orange light on to Supervisor Bostrom's. We're going to continue to look at stuff. There's things in the works that we're looking at that still could be, give us some positive value engineering type things that wouldn't affect the project in any material way. Those are the kinds of things we're going to continue to look at. I won't recommend taking anything that's going to materially degrade the project from where it is right now without coming to the committee and letting people know that. Because there's some very minor things that actually add up. Stainless steel features that can also be done in other trim that will still look very nice but won't be stainless steel. There's some things we're looking at that actually add up, 10,000 here, 8,000 there. We're looking at those kinds of things just to kind of keep things dialed in as best we can. But the soils, you know, definitely hurt us. So if we wouldn't have had that, we'd be in very healthy shape. As it is, we're managing things pretty tight right now. But that's just where it's at. The work itself is going good. The quality, again, the architects, when they come down, every time they come down, they are blown away, which is every other week they come down for a project meeting, and they're blown away because the projects that they've got going on in the Milwaukee area, the quality of the trades just isn't anywhere near what's going on in our building. So that's always good to hear. Not so good for the Milwaukee folks, but good for us. So that's pretty much where Brookside's at.
Just to add something to Brookside, we had the trustees meeting today, and we heard pretty much the same thing as what you're talking about now. At 3 o'clock on Tuesday the 3rd, we're having our meeting, and we're planning a walkthrough for the trustees, so everybody wants to come through on the 3rd of January at 3 o'clock.
It should definitely be comfy to walk through that, yeah. Regardless of what the outside temperatures are.
You said they're working in T-shirts now, so... And the other buildings. So.
Good to know. Thanks.
On that contingency fund, what was the total amount of our contingency fund at the beginning?
We had, off the top of my head, I believe it was $539,000. Like around $550,000, something like that, in that ballpark. And for the soils, I want to say it was a better part of $300,000 so far that we've used for soils, both compromised soils that had to be strengthened, basically, as well as contaminated soils that had to be removed. So those two soils-related things took up the better part of $300,000. Yeah, the other stuff has been really minimal. Anything else that we've encountered has been pretty small. It's really just been the soils. To department report. Really all the divisions are working on wrapping up year-end activities and projects, getting projects ready to launch for 17. I think everybody's aware that Gary's retirement, we're going to have a kind of formal get-together here on the 14th. Hopefully everybody got notification of that. If you can make it, that'd be great. It's between 11 and 1. And then in January, we'll have a resolution to appoint Clement as the director. Kind of just trying to wrap stuff up and get a bunch of stuff queued up for next year and keep things rolling.
Very good. Any questions for Ray? If not, then we'll look for a motion to adjourn.
So moved.
Supervisor Day, seconded by Supervisor Gilmore.
Aye.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Thank you, everyone.
Thank you.
See ya.
Mrs. Mike Bond works in our finance department, is helping us. Chris is from our finance department, too. When you was able to make it, so these guys are...
Yeah, I was going to say, these guys get recruited here. Is Wendy, Wendy helping with the ballot count or something?
No, she's on a cruise. Yeah, she took vacation.
Oh.
So she's on a cruise.
Good for her. And then the finance department.
Where they got, the wood came from all over the world. I mean, this is amazing.